There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get started with this episode of Benched with Bubba, I want to tell you I am stoked to be collaborating with Rotoballer this 2020 season with the Benched with Bubba podcast joining the Rotoballer Radio Network. Since 2013, Rotoballer has been grinding away providing millions of fantasy baseball players their fix for in-depth MLB analysis and player news. If you haven't heard, Rotoballer 2020 MLB Draft Kit is live, and all Benched with Bubba listeners can get 10% off Rotoballer's Draft Kit by using the discount code Bubba. Rotoballer is home to the number one Fantasy Pros accuracy ranker, Nick Mariano. Nick's 2020 rankings and projections are available as part of Rotoballer's draft kit, along with printable cheat sheets, draft sleepers, and busts. More than 300 2020 player outlooks and tons of in-season tools. All this fantasy baseball goodness from Rotoballer is available for 10% off with a discount code Bubba. Just go to rotoballer.com/Bubba and get your draft kit today. They have tons of great stuff, and you get premium with promo code Bubba, DFS, all the goodies. Use promo code Bubba, sign up at Rotoballer, get an extra 10% off with promo code Bubba. Now to tonight's episode of Benched with Bubba. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 300. We have a special. Yes, sir.
This is amazing.
You know the voice. You know the voice, folks. You know the voice, and you'll know the face if you go to YouTube. You can check it out. Find him on Twitter at PitcherList. Quite the guy, Mr. Nick Pollock. How we doing, man?
What is happening? This is your 300th episode, Bubba. This is such an achievement. This is ridiculous. I remember you sent me this. And I kind of breezed past what number it was, and then I see the thing on the bottom now. And like, how is this not like, hey, I'm doing my special, 300th episode. This is a huge deal, man. This is awesome.
I appreciate it. I thought about doing something like that, but I figured, Nick Pollock is a great way to do 300. And I keep telling myself it's like every milestone 100 or whatever. I keep telling myself, I'm going to wait. I'll do it at 500. And I'm just telling myself that. Then you start thinking inside, that's 200 more episodes.
I mean, okay, so how long have you been doing this?
I started probably about 3.5-4 years ago, but I started going really heavy about 1.5-2 years ago.
So my assumption is just like one a week, but no, it's more than that. Yeah.
It's usually 2 a week. If it's really good going baseball, I'll go 3 a week.
Amazing. That's not easy to do, guys, at all. Fast and I, we just recorded 198.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember, like I highly doubt it, when we had our 100th episode, we had our first live podcast where we like gave away a few things, mm-hmm. like the Blake Snell blueprint that Yancey was like, I need it. So he sent him one. We're thinking for 200 of doing like a just inviting everyone we can think of. Just to be like, hey guys, like I just want all of you to stop in, whoever wants to stop in for this podcast, like say hi, you know, we'll answer, we'll give you like one question, I don't know, stuff like that. Like
picture this cocktail hour, let's come hang out for a bit.
Like let's just hang out and stuff for like an hour or two.
PitchCon 2.0. Let's just go.
No, I already know what the plan is for PitchCon 2021. Awesome. I can't reveal it yet, but there will 100% be. It will be an annual thing, and it'll make sense when that is fully announced. But I mean, look, I'm gonna say this, Bubba. You'd be surprised. I mean, you shouldn't be. Knowing you, you like for whatever reason you would be. But if like you know, if you were like, hey, if you wanted to do something like that, you easily could. We would all love to for you, man. Yeah. Like so, we'll all right, 400 or whatever, 350.
Yeah.
Whatever milestone.
Maybe we'll do it at 301. Just bring we'll on
see. This loser, okay? Like do a real thing, okay?
Okay, we'll do a big one, I promise. We all will. Right, we'll do a big one. We'll good. Throw you a party and I'll have to start with Yancey or he'll be very angry.
You so. Just do it like 301. Just yeah. Like, really, there was one that was like a stupid episode. So. Yeah.
Monday night. We're just going to do it Monday night. Let's just go. There it is. Beautiful. Love it. Oh, that's great. Well, before we get into your forte, pitching, mm-hmm. Let's talk about what took place today. We did an awesome mock draft with a 12-man mock with 12 great analysts, yourself, myself, and others. Well, you, me, and a bunch of other really good analysts took place in this and okay. Raised money for a great cause. So first, explain the cause we raised money for mm-hmm. and how it links to your guys' deal at Pitcher List and how people are embracing it, and then we'll talk about the mock draft.
Yeah, so essentially, if you guys saw on Twitter, we put out a message, our promise, essentially that we're going to be better, of course, to be more inclusive, people of color, and doing what we can as a fantasy baseball industry to ensure that we, you know, we have more people, more minorities represented, as well as doing what we can, of course, for minority communities. And it was signed by a lot of industries, or sorry, a lot of people inside the industry. And part of that is little things like we did today, where we hosted a mock draft with 11 talented people in the industry, including yourself, Bubba, of course. Very happy you were able to do it. We did a live draft for about 2 hours and change. I mean, it flew by. We did it in under 2 hours, but I mean, we stuck around after. But that's the fastest I've ever seen a 23-round draft. There you go. That's the experts that we have. And I even included Chris Dowers actually losing internet for a good 2 minutes or whatever. Amazing. But we raised money for the Dream Foundation. We are dream.org/donate. Of course, if you want to donate to it, you really should consider it. They do a wonderful job with youth development. They have programs for all kind of leadership skills. And they have a whole baseball program where all the kids that go through it play baseball to learn those necessary kids and to bond and to have good mentorship and leadership skills. All that stuff is fantastic. It really is. And of course, it involves baseball too. So we absolutely love it on top of all of that. We couldn't be happier to support. And yeah, we had a donation link during it. We gave away a membership to PL Plus for those that did donate while watching, which is awesome. And we hope to do more things like that, of course, moving forward. Because, I mean, this is stuff that we would do anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, I would want to do an industry mock like this to just have, you know, have that base, like that foundation. Because I needed this.
Yes.
We all kind of need it. We're big 3 weeks away, and I feel so rusty. Mm-hmm. And I still don't know what to do with so many players and positions. So we're going to do this anyway. Might as well also do it for a fantastic cause, of course. So I'm really excited that we were able to, we're really happy we were able to get so many great people together to do it. I'm looking forward to doing more of those in the future.
Yeah, it was awesome. Glad I got to be a part of it. And like you said, it's, you know, we've been talking strategies. You've been talking about it on your shows. I've been talking about it on mine. But one thing I keep kind of going back to is there's so many different ways to kind of game plan for a 60-game sprint. And it's just crazy. And this draft was a perfect example of it, like absolutely mm-hmm. perfect. There are so many different philosophies. And like we talked about it before the show, Bobby Sylvester goes and takes 8 relief pitchers, not closers, relief pitchers.
Right.
And that was quite interesting. Anything really stand out to you? Like I told you, I'm still kind of gravitating and looking at it, and I'm going to write an article on it and everything. But there were definitely, like, Mike Trout went 5th, everybody. 5th.
Stuff See, like I that. Completely understand that.
Yes. Because, a lot of question marks there.
I mean, because the thing is, if he does, which he should, as a, I 100% respect it, to be with his wife as she delivers, or like, you know, of course, when his child comes to the world, obviously be there. Mm-hmm. And if he does that, that means he needs to miss 2 weeks because he needs to be in quarantine. That's a lot of the season, especially for your first pick. And I mean, I personally am going Christian Yelich. My whole staff, it's kind of funny. We have our staff leagues. It's relegation based. If you didn't know that, it's amazing.
Oh, that's outstanding.
Like we have six leagues and then like the bottom three and the top three would swap every. It's like, what's like the dream thing to do if you have a ton of fantasy baseball people, right? That's awesome. So I'm obviously, I'm in like we call it the Legacy League, which is essentially I don't know football enough. Is it championship or is it premier? What is like the number one league?
Well, soccer, it's premier, yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That football.
Yeah, it's football.
Yes, it is. Yes, football. European football is premier.
Yeah. Okay. That's our version of that. And so I actually have the first pick this year, and I didn't say what it was for ages because Fast has the second one. And I wanted to make
mess with him the whole time.
So long. Yes. And I've announced that it's Christian Yelich. I've announced that. I mean, if he's listening to this, 100% it's Christian Yelich. But seriously, no, it is. For me, it's Christian Yelich. Acuna is second now. And it's interesting. Yancey took Bellinger third. And
Surprised me a little bit.
I get it, though.
Yes, because, 100% get
time
it.
With Trout, like, to me, Bellinger is number three, or at least the ones after the Holy Trinity. I get it. It's weird. And it's those kind of things that we need to adapt to. For the shortened season.
With Mike Trout, the one thing I'm going to ask, because I haven't seen it officially anywhere, mm-hmm. I understand like the assumption that he's going to take the 14 days, like it's going to be a requirement.
Yeah.
But you're looking at other sports right now, and there's other sports letting people back after like X amount of positive or negative tests and all these different things. So I would imagine it's still 14 days, but I haven't seen it set in stone yet for the
NFL. I haven't seen that either. And I've made assumptions too. For example, even though Carlos Carrasco is on the 60 man, I do not believe that he should play.
I hope he doesn't play.
Right. So I am not in any way assuming that he is, mm-hmm. even with that 60 man. I'm like, as you said, exactly. I hope he doesn't, because I don't want any way for Carlos Carrasco to be harmed by this. So, at this point, we're just kind of making those assumptions. You're totally right. But again, the right thing to do is a 14-day quarantine, from my understanding. So I would hope they would instill that. Yes. And it's important for us to never be upset at the rules based on these things, because it's very like this is a real life thing. And we should understand that we're playing a game that's it's not nearly as important than everything else. As long as we understand, okay, cool, this is the adaptations we need to make, or the way we need to roll with it, and just not be angry about it. That's the thing I constantly need to reiterate, essentially, as we're doing this.
It's going to be crazy because we're in an unknown thing. There's going to be guys that get positive test results that are going to miss time, and you can't predict that. And you can't get mad at that. And that's just the way it's going to go. So the biggest thing we can hope for is no one gets seriously sick and hurt from this. That's the scary thing, because it's one of those things, you know, agree or disagree with what it is. The players want to play. Like you see them, the videos, like they're happy to be playing. You see them tweeting about it. It's just one of those things that it's just a kind of rough deal. But let's keep it on a positive note here and go back to the mock draft. Pitching flew off the board. Flew off the board. I know I had three starters through six rounds, which is not normal for me. Over half, like almost three quarters of the guys had at least two pitchers through four rounds. We mentioned Chris Towers went Flaherty, Giolito, Glasnow, and Nola rounds three through six. Mm-hmm. How did that go for you for a guy that likes to kind of wait on pitching?
I mean, I got Chris Paddock in the sixth, which is so weird because I've not drafted Paddock at all. I have no anticipation to draft Paddock. I was in the 12th spot out of 12 teams for the standard 5x5 roto, three outfielders, nine pitcher slots, two utilities, no middle infielders or corner infield, right? So I normally wait until like the seventh round or maybe even eighth sometimes to get my first starter. But here's the thing. I'm at the 6-7 turn essentially. So the fifth, sixth turn, and then next round, 7-8, but the seventh round really is the eighth. And I didn't really feel comfortable at that point going for the start, especially considering that so many flew off the board. So I looked at my list and I was like, all right, who's the highest ranked starter right now? And for me, it's Chris Paddock over Corey Kluber. Just barely, but that's the case of it. And I found myself going Chris Paddock, and I felt kind of fine with the rest of the staff. I mean, getting Wheeler, Bumgarner, and Gallon, essentially, there's the 8-9 turn, and then the 10-11. Like, how did you guys let me get Gallon finally?
Yeah.
Maybe it's because it's not a pitcherless mock, I guess. I don't know. But I'm happy to finally have Gallon on any mock. But I also, there's something that I think, as I was doing the draft, I thought more and more about that I might be implementing more in my future list is, I remember back in March and February, I put a heavy weight on volume guys because I was like, you know what? We getting 200 innings is like a major thing. And 160 versus 200 is a huger thing. I wasn't giving enough credit to that in previous years. So I was pushing up your Lance Lynn and Bumgarner and Kluber and Greinke a bit because of that. Then short season, I thought, okay, actually not so much because the innings per start is actually not as influential in, like, you know, the strikeouts per start or so, or in the ERA whip influence from that is not actually in my, you know, I didn't really feel that that was enough for me to push them up as I was before. But now there's a lot of talk of starters not going their full amount to start, right? Like, they're just going with the Braves. It's like, we'll go 2-3 innings.
Yeah, no big deal. We're good. Don't worry about it.
Why? Yeah. Like, don't do that. You have such a short season. Don't give us even less of them. So my thought process now is, okay, then I want guys that I can see on teams where they're just gonna be like, nah, go and do it. Like, who are the old rugged ones that would put up a stink if they were pulled after three? So Madison Bumgarner.
There's one that stands out big time on your roster.
Lance Lynn, I would say too, right? Like, I would say Kluber would be like, no, guys, I'm Corey Kluber. Hi, I'm going to pitch as long as I can, you know? So that's kind of where my mindset became. I think Paddock too would actually have a little bit of like, guys, I'm the sheriff. I'm fine. Okay. So I'm actually essentially my whole draft strategy now is ego pitchers.
Ego pitchers.
I need the ego guys, right? The ones that are like, no. I am dope and I know that I'm dope and we're going to do this. I'm not saying ego is a bad thing, by the way. Just so we're clear, it just means that you establish like you can do this and you trust in yourself. So I see that with Bumgarner. I see that with Paddock. I see that with Lynn. Wheeler and Gallon, I feel like the Phillies are just going to let him do it. They have such a weird back end to that rotation that they would let him go. And it's also like the new prize, and they're kind of like, I want to show off the new prize. You can also argue like you don't want to damage it, but I think that's fine. Zach Gallon, I couldn't say no to him. I do feel a little bit like he might be a little bit babied, maybe. But I hope not. I hope not.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm a big Gallon fan as well. It kind of stinks that this is happening the way it's happening, because I think there will be some teams that limit their pitchers early, but at the same time, you can't limit all five in your rotation. That's just not going to be possible. So I think there's one or two at least in every rotation that you're good to go. Like, you know, everyone's saying that Dave Roberts is only letting them go 3-4 innings. No, I'm pretty sure Buehler and Kershaw are going to go 5-6 pretty much out the gate.
David Price is going to do David Price things.
Exactly. They might get fishy with the back end of the rotation. But so even the Braves, I could see, you know, some of the guys like Foltynewicz and some of those guys, the older guys going farther. Maybe Soroka and Fried for a couple, but it won't take long.
That Braves quote, though, oh man, that killed me. Because I think that Hamels is a really good last, like, late round fly. I don't think he was even drafted in this.
I don't think he was either.
Unless and he was super late. He can get you a quick win in the first week. But then that quote comes out that they'll say we'll push up to four or so in the first game. I'm like, oh my God. It's Hamels. It's a 1-year deal.
You have nothing to lose.
Like, come on. You're going to get 11 starts out of him. Please don't do that. And Foltynewicz, too, I mean, I was really in on Foltynewicz. I had him in so many drafts in March because I think everyone's looking at that first half when he really lost the slider, went to the minors, and then fixed it. Mm-hmm. And he was someone that also would push 200 innings, I think, too, with, like, just not hurt you, essentially.
Yeah.
Obviously not going to be the 2018 guy, but you don't need to be effective. And it's funny, you said something fishy with the rotation. Well, speaking of which, the Marlins, Caleb Smith.
Your boy.
He's, look, Look, I know the famous discussion that Spore and I had about him. Do you remember what it was about?
I'm not 100%. I just know it was some of the best arguing amongst friends on a live podcast I have ever heard.
I highly disagree. I was terrible at it. I didn't want to. But no, it was about 9 Caleb Smith starts. And really, yeah. And honestly, I really meant 11. That's the season. And that's how he started last year. He came on our podcast, talked about his hip injury limiting him. And when he came back, he wasn't getting the same velocity. He wasn't trusting his body as much. So now he's healthy. And even if it's the same, you know, same thing as last year, well, that's 9-11 starts or whatever it is. 9 or 11. Oh, I should say it like that. 9 or 11 starts that he'll have of having higher velocity. And yeah, he was, I mean, Caleb Smith, I really want to emphasize this a lot because I think it's very important for people to understand how effective Caleb Smith was in the short term of last year.
Outstanding.
It was the first 2 months of the season. In those 11 starts, a 3.10 ERA, 11.8 K per nine, 2.7 walk per nine, with a 0.97 whip. That's a 34% K rate in there and sub 8% walk rate. I mean, I'm really cool with that. Velocity is back. So if it is back, and that would be above 92, so 92, 93, that's what you're looking for if we get summer camp and stuff. I mean, I put out a 4,000 word article about all these things. So if you want to, thanks, Casey. If you want to read about what you should be monitoring between now and start of the season, go check that out at Pitcher List. It's 4,000 words, and it's really like, I think I wrote that in like 2.5 hours. If you can believe that,
wow.
It was literally just like me at the keyboard, like Jim Carrey, Almighty, whatever. Yeah, and it was just like, okay, let's just spill it all out, you know. That's certainly one element of it, and there's a lot more there too. But I'm hoping Caleb Smith can do that.
Yeah, I highly recommend checking that article out. I always talk about, I'm not the only one, but like Jeff Zimmerman does his Mining the News, which is always outstanding because this offseason is going to be, we're going to need it more than ever with all this stuff. And then when I saw your article, I was like, oh, this is amazing because we have so many pitching questions, so many, and we're not going to get all the answers.
Oh, but, I'll help as much as I can. You know what? Ignorant me over here, super ignorant. I saw, okay, spring training or summer camp, whatever, starts July 1st. What I thought is that meant we'd get like a televised game, game or something. And I was like, oh man, I felt so stupid. I was planning this draft during the first day of when we'd have stuff on TV. And then I write this article being like, okay, we're going to have all these games. I got to get it out before July 1st because then they're going to see all this stuff. And then I actually deleted a tweet from last night where I went on MLB.tv to see like July 2nd, what games were on, and they had like, okay, they had all these broadcasts. I was like, oh, I'm so happy. I get to see it. I tweeted out an image of it saying, I am so happy. And then in like 5 seconds, I realized it's just MLB not postponing the games of the regular season schedule.
Oh my goodness.
You know, like they still have the same thing. You know, if you go today, it was like all postponed. And they haven't updated it yet for everything else. So ignorant me was like, wow, they're playing in Miller Park. Like, what? This is crazy. Oh my Lord. So it's gonna
be tough because they're only doing, each team can do a max 3 exhibition games and they're not scheduled. So it's like you got to call your buddies to go play. It's like when we used to live in the cul-de-sac or something. it's the Sandlot. It's literally the Sandlot.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, oh, I love
the Sandlot.
So. You sure he can't come out today?
Exactly. Oh man, it's like we'll be home when the sun comes down. I promise, we'll be there.
We don't have a catcher though. I mean, okay, so it's intra-squad games plus 3 exhibition. Yeah. So I mean, I hope the Yankees are doing it in Yankee Stadium, right? Like they have the whole setup.
Well, that's what I've been saying. They still have all the MLB like network cameras in there, the ballpark cams. They still have all the Statcast data in there. It's like, let's go. Let's figure things out here. Turn the radar guns on. Let's figure it out.
You guys like money because you can get TV money.
Well, we obviously know they don't know how to utilize the fans' money because we would have been willing to pay for a lot of things a long time ago.
If I had one wish in this world, it would be to have creative control of MLB.
Oh, that would, I would love to see that.
Like, that would actually, I'm actually serious. Like, everyone asks, like, what would be to fly or something like that? Yeah. Like, you have no idea how high I could fly if I could do, I could be in charge of the creative control of the MLB.
What city would the MLB offices be? Would it be in New York since you live there? Or would you pick somewhere there. Else? Yeah, but would you pick somewhere else? Where would you want the offices?
Obviously, New York. You know, I want it to be next door to my apartment. How about that?
There you go. Super easy.
No, I wouldn't want that. Actually, I would want like the Lucite tables and the glass offices, you know. So actually, you know what? Don't go here in Park Slope. Go to Manhattan or something where we can have those big high rises and amazing looking things. Yeah. There, not the brownstone next door to me. That's not where we want to have an office, though.
I love it. I love it. Before we go on to the pitchers, I want everybody just to remember, go check out the mock draft that we did. It's really cool. Like, so many players fell. It was quite the eye opener, and I'm really already looking forward to doing another one to see how things go, because it was different. It was good to do, though. Very, very good to do.
Check out my Twitter if you're looking for that. So at PitcherList, this should be one of the major tweets.
Yes, go check that out. There's links to stuff. It's definitely worth looking at. You've already mentioned some of your philosophies. We know you like to wait on pitching, and then things change a little bit in this draft. You're going to use – you're looking at kind of those old ego guys. Do you foresee as – I like the way you phrase it. You say it so much better than me. I just call them old guys that they're not afraid to throw their arms off, basically. So,
well, I mean, Paddock, though, isn't – you know.
He's not that way. But see, right. they took them a while to unleash Paddock last year. So, like
– that's fair. That's a good point.
It kind of concerns me a little bit.
Well, okay, so it wasn't, though – like, they weren't like a pitches per start – thing though, like by the end he was pitching over 100, sure. You know, 100 pitches in a game. So I mean it's the opposite of what I think about Lance McCullers.
Yes,
because I think the Astros, like, they gave us 110 120 innings or so, right? That was back in February, and I was so confused because I didn't know if that meant he goes for 3 months or 4 months and then they stop, or is it they goes for a month and then they like stop him for a skip him a couple times, or is it we're just going to limit you to 80 pitches in this game, which actually I think they would likely do of all those scenarios, just make him go five innings or something like that. And I think in general, when it comes to pitcher control, it is more so about stressful pitches inside of games and not pushing them when you don't have to. That's when it actually starts to have damage, because you're just not giving the arm enough time to heal as you go again. So it's not about like going 25 starts and not going at 26th. It's actually making sure those 24 beforehand are good enough for that 25 and like pitch, you know, limiting. So I think that's how the Astros would do it, which means that it's the anti-ego. It's the id. I don't know. That's Lance McCullers is still someone I'm kind of avoiding because I don't think he's going to go six innings often.
No, I like that, because I know some people have changed their mindset on him thinking the opposite. But yours makes a lot of sense, because A, you'd expect the Astros to be contending for the playoffs or in the playoffs. So they might want him for the postseason.
That's a great point, too. Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to want him. Plus, the Astros always have that depth. Like, we already talked, you know, they got Josh James, they got Rikiti, other options there that they can use and right. kind of piggyback.
Fort Whitley after 7 games. Yeah. They have actually it's different for Forrest Whitley. He's actually showed up for like a brief moment, didn't he?
I think so.
Was it? Wait, I should remember this.
Oh, he got suspended
last year. Right.
Maybe.
He hasn't. I don't think he ever made his.
No, he never made a debut. Never
did. All right, so we got away 7 games for Forrest Whitley. Amber Valdez, you also have Austin Pruitt, who actually have even said that they wanted to start in Houston. So, yeah, it's kind of weird. I mean, with Rikiti and Josh James, too, I find myself not chasing either one of them because of that plethora of options. Like, you have Verlander and Greinke, as you said.
And they're going to throw innings.
And then, yeah.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting. And I think that's one of the ways to kind of break it down now is almost – you can make your rankings, and then we'll get into yours because yours is the list, and we'll get into that. But I think part of it has to be a team-by-team basis, because they're all going to run things differently. It's so much more than just 162 games. We're going to get these guys. We kind of know where things go.
Right.
There's so much more strategy involved than just, hey, this guy's better than this guy.
Yeah.
It's so weird to do it that way.
What is this world?
But yeah, it's everything. And we are halfway through it today. Halfway through 2020.
That's right. I mean,
it's wild.
I mean, it won't, none of this will really truly return to normalcy until we have vaccines and stuff. And that hopefully, I mean, cross our fingers, that's January and February with the Oxford trials. So
yeah, let's hope.
And we don't have to deal with any of this for baseball 2021. I mean, I just hope that everyone still loves the sport by then.
Yeah, hopefully they can.
You know, I'm not going to take that for granted.
Yeah, that's the biggest reason why, as foolish as it may be to play, that I'm glad they're trying to play, because I think they need to try to bring some glimmer to this year from all the damage they caused. It's like, you got to do something. Otherwise, it's going to be horrible. I mean,
again, I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah. I'm with you. Let's talk about the list, though. List, we're calling it 2.0. The 60-game shortened list came out.
Yeah, that sounds good. I like it.
Your 100 top pitchers and your explanations and all that good stuff. First off, how often do you plan on updating it in this craziness of the summer camp?
Yeah, right. When I feel like there's a major thing to discuss. I mean, what I've done in the past is always kind of weird when I put out the initial rankings in February and then I wait and there's always things that change. And it's kind of funny. There are always a couple people that get upset that I change things before even the season starts. Because it's like, well, how are we supposed to take your rankings with any sort of face value then? Which is a really good point. There's also the fact that we get a lot more information, and then it's just not good for me to not report on that information and to have like outdated stuff. So what I've done in the past and what I think I'll probably do with this is in like 2 weeks or so, put out just a list of guys, not the actual updating of the list, but just players that I'm likely going to shift instead of doing a full-on update. I'll say, like, look, I'm going to pull up these guys and then push down these probably and explain why. And then I'll do a proper update to the list on the Monday before the start of the season, as I often do.
That makes a lot of sense. I released my positional rankings and everything today for this new ramp up, and I already realized that I had so many typos and just I had Joe Musgrove in there twice and all kinds of good stuff. I blame Toby for that. But
Toby, we were talking about this beforehand.
Yeah, you guys need to talk about this at next first pitch whenever we get to have that. That's going to be a conversation right there.
I mean, I absolutely love Batflip Crazy, Toby. Yep. What we recognized before this podcast started was that I am the anti-Toby. Because I don't do pocket aces. I wait on it completely. So that understood right away. But then, of course, his name is Batflip Crazy. I'm about pitchers. Of course, I'm pitcher list. And, I mean, what I always say? Don't draft a Toby, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm just anti-Toby.
Yes.
And it's a shame. It feels really weird saying that because I love the guy so much. He's amazing.
Yeah.
But I'm so sorry. I'm anti-Toby. That's all.
Yeah. It was so funny. So good. So good. I'd love to see how that all plays out. So we already kind of hit on we're waiting on more news. You know, there's certain guys we know that we think will go longer in games. They kind of get a little bit of a boost going into drafts and whatnot. I think as news comes out, I think it's a good idea you have putting your kind of guys you're moving around without putting the list. Cause when I put my rankings out, I said, okay, guys, this is going to be fluid. Like, if a bunch of news comes out, I'm going to update things.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be so much craziness. It's like certain teams will be way more talkative than other teams. And it's just, we don't know what we're going to do. It's like literally deciphering a Rubik's Cube out there.
Yeah.
So it's crazy.
So we should all just collectively understand that we should be embracing the chaos.
Yes.
Right. Just recognize that, look, we don't know anything. I mean, we say that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We do not know anything, but we really don't know anything this year.
You're in a dark, dark void right now.
Oh, man. And it's I mean, I'm so excited. I think I said this on the other podcast with Fast last night on the corner. And the SP Roundup is something that I'm just so excited to do again. I really, really am, because I mean, that's such an identity for me at this point, like doing it for 6 months straight for, I guess it's five consecutive years that I've done that. And then a part of 2014. And I am going to be so ultra focused on that this year, because I think the importance of an article like that is heightened in a shortened season. where you need to know, I mean, we all really need to know if this start is legitimate or not more than ever.
Real quick, you say that, and I was going to ask you, but this is a good time for it. When we have a full season,
yeah,
we have the ability to like look at Statcast, look at velocities, look at things, and go, okay, a couple starts has shown this reaction. Maybe he's off. We don't have that this year.
No.
So how are you going to go about, like, I know it's obviously in the end a case-by-case basis, but how do you think you're going to, like, know when to pull the pin?
You won't. I can tell you that right now. What I'm going to try, what I'm going to say, and this is often what I say, like, in the SB roundups and stuff, and say, like, look, if he were to have a breakout, this is what it looks like. He just did the things that would dictate it. The crazy thing about pitching is what we talk about a lot with Jack Flaherty, and it's the word that I think we should be using the most with him, is rhythm. He was in rhythm last year. We never truly thought that Jack Flaherty wasn't capable of having a game like he did in the second half. He was just so locked in that he did that game all the time. And it's essentially, so we're going to watch a game, and it's so important. I think the biggest distinction for me when I get into, say, like, I love this guy or I don't, and I, as you certainly know, I've been wrong many times.
We all are.
I get excited because I see him perform at a level that showcases, okay, this is the level that he can be at, and pitching like this does mean that you have success. There are a lot of times that guys have good lines that aren't actually related to them changing and pitching at their best.
Yeah.
So that's the distinction that I think we're going to have to lean on more for this season. And it's not going to work every time, but it will certainly give us a better edge. If you're asking, like, what is it during the start that will highlight that? Well, I mean, it's part of the reason why I started using CSW and stuff, is saying, look, we can quickly point without even watching the start. That slider was obviously better today because it had a 40% CSW rate, which is well above average for sliders. And normally his is kind of like a 28%. But here he was cruising with it. He was throwing it low a ton. He wasn't hanging them up. That's what it looks like when he has success. Do I know if he's going to do that next time? No, but I would imagine it's a better chance now after doing it once. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of stuff that that we can lean on a bit. It's about individual pitch performance inside of a game. I'm going to do everything I can to, I don't know, it's kind of funny. Like, I'm in quarantine, so no one really cared about my social life before. Now in the next 2 months or 3 months, I guess, because we're not at the season yet, I'm going to be focusing so much more on watching everything. And I can imagine myself, people saying, like, oh, why are you busy now as opposed to before? I'm like, guys, I gotta do this. This is it, you know? So I'm going to make those sacrifices because, I mean, obviously we're all starting.
Sacrifices. You know? I got to watch baseball.
I've made it a thing over like multiple years now. In October, I watch every playoff game now. I felt there was a time when, you know, I'd get pulled in all these directions. You're in New York City. There's a constant tug here. And I would say, okay, you know what? I'll watch one and then like I'll read about the other one later or whatever. And I just felt I was doing myself almost a disservice. Like, I need to know what's going on. I need to be able to talk about this the right way. I need to see all of it. So I tell my friends, like, October, so sorry. Like, if you want to hang out with me, you got to come and watch a game with me.
That's awesome. You know?
So that's the kind of stuff that, like, for this, like, sorry guys, like, we haven't had anything.
Yep.
I'm watching like everything now.
No, I get it. Cause so. I kind of like that aspect of the season because I've said it forever, the way I analyze things as I keep embracing stats as best as I can. But I used to just be more of a field guy. I played the game, not long, as long as you, but I played for a while. Like you said, rhythms. Like, as a hitter, there's slumps, there's this, there's that. There's parts of the game that you can't just analyze in numbers. And right. I think that'll be something that we could see by watching games this season that could be very interesting. I'm with you 100% on that one.
You know, like, a great example of rhythm is you can kind of – this is going to be so annoying for people because it sounds like such pseudoscience. And I'm sorry. But a great example for me is a guy that's like in an at bat, and it's a typical, like, he strikes a guy out on a 2-2 pitch or something, right? But inside that at bat, like, the he throws an 0-2 pitch that is just like slowly taken, and like the guy just barely doesn't swing at it off the plate or something, right? It's 1-2. And then he throws a 2-2 pitch that is actually somewhat of a mistake. But then you can see the pitcher be upset at himself because he was like, "Guy, I'm in such a rhythm. Like, how could I allow myself to do that?" Yeah. You know? And then he goes out and he throws the same pitch again and executes it as he should have and gets it, right? They're like little things like that when you can just see, like, okay, this guy is just absolutely killing it right now. And it was really funny. We do like classic games of the day during this quarantine inside of our Discord. If you want to join that, join Pitcherless Plus. It's amazing. Yep. Pitcherless.com/plus. All right, I'm so sorry.
Plug.
You really should be there. It's the best place on the internet. We would have games that we would all watch together. And we watched the Pedro Martinez's, I think it was a 17 strikeout game. Maybe it was 19. I don't know. It was something ridiculous against the Yankees back in 98 or 99. And I actually really hadn't sat down and watched Pedro in a long time, for like an extended period, you know, for his full game. And in that game, I think the thing that really stuck out to me the most, and you can really, I think the best pitchers out there have this quality. It's if you miss a pitch, you throw it again. Yeah. Like you have such confidence in your stuff that I threw a bad one there. I know that I can tweak it and I'll get this guy out. I knew it. It was such an amazing thing. He faced Chili Davis in that game. It was they lost because 1-0 because of Chili Davis hitting a solo shot, I think. Or it wasn't a no hitter or something like that. Maybe they won 2-1 or something. I don't know. He allowed one hit the entire game. It was a Chili Davis solo shot off a fastball that he missed. It was supposed to go away and went too far middle, and that was it. He needed to get Chili Davis out on a fastball in the next at bat. Like, he refused. Like, anything, if he threw a changeup, he could easily, he would have done it. It would have been over. No, he had to get him out with a heater. And so many pitchers would say, "Oh my God, I just allowed a home run down the middle last time. Like, I don't have confidence doing that against Chili Davis. Like, look, I know I can throw three changeups and I'll swing at all three and they'll be fine." Not Pedro, not the guy, not like the best guys. They were so confident that they are in rhythm that they're willing to do that. It's those little things like that that I think can help us illuminate the difference between what's on the page and what's on the screen.
No, that makes a ton of sense. That makes a ton of sense. And Pedro is great at that. So that's definitely something to definitely look at. People, if there's listeners, younger people on this show that never got to really sit and enjoy a Pedro start, I recommend doing it.
Really?
Like, he was amazing. Like, he was literally amazing. It was ridiculous what he could do.
I hadn't done it. I really hadn't done it. And I was so happy that that we did for that. It's special.
All right, let's talk about some of the guys on your list here, because I'll give you this much credit with everybody saying, you know, these guys are falling this year. These guys are rising. Your overall, like, heavy fall list was not that heavy. So I was very impressed by that, because I was going through your pluses and minuses. I'm like, yeah, it's not too bad. But you did have some serious risers, and then just some guys I had general questions on, because you tier it out nicely. And you know, the top tier guys, that's pretty Captain Obvious stuff to me. You can make arguments in a bunch of different directions. Like, I'm not going to tell someone they're right or wrong here. But in tier three, I am curious, because you moved Blake Snell up 6 spots. And I get the fact that we've been off for a while. And he's kind of, he had that shoulder injury, and he had an injury last year, all that good stuff. But you moved him up. Are you confident? Are you good with his health and everything? Or is this more just Blake Snell's Blake Snell and we have to trust him?
So here's the thing. You're only as good as your information, right? Sure. This is, if you remember The Wire, you're only as good as your
information. Great show.
Yeah. Okay. And it's important to understand who you put faith in for that information. I 100% trust Stephen Lyman. He works at HSS, that is the Hospital Special Services, a huge, huge hospital here in New York City. He's currently off in Japan. Unbelievably nice guy. I got to meet him at Arizona and First Pitch, and he was on PitchCon as well, where we sat down for an hour. And this is a podcast that we were planning to do. He was going to come by to record it with me, and of course COVID happened and he went back home. And we want to just go through all these injured players, because I would say something that I certainly struggle with, because I don't have that information about what does an injury mean and how does it affect your body? How does it affect your ability to perform? What is the general healing period? Is it something that lingers? Is it not? All that stuff that we kind of throw around that I personally didn't really know how we should be applying it, right? And Chris Towers actually today during the mock draft was saying, I think as an industry, we put too much of a weight on injury stuff. And I lean to agree with him because I sat down with Lyman and obviously went through all these major guys. I've seen some rankings that push down Verlander and Clevinger really, really far because they had an injury. And I went straight to him. I was like, okay, Scherzer too, by the way, but which we were discounting initially because we were like, hey, well, how's that back and stuff? I went through all of these and you can watch it. I have the receipts. So you can, it's on YouTube. It's a Pentagon, okay? And Blake Snell said, no. He removed loose bodies. Okay, remove loose bodies from his elbow. That's only going to help him. Okay. It's not something that affects him moving forward. If anything, it makes him better because he doesn't have those loose bodies. He should be totally fine. It's healed up completely. Everything is essentially, you go in, you do it. It's got to just have the basic healing returned. It's done that. He should be fine. And I'd say the more the question of Blake Snell is honestly, is he going to be able to throw his curveball and slider for a strike like he did in 2018? Because the zone rates dropped, like they plummeted on those pitches, forcing him to throw more fastballs and curveballs and changeups for strikes, which meant they got burned more often. So the beauty of Blake Snell was having a curveball and slider he could throw for a strike, and then when he needed to, not throwing him for a strike, and it just threw guys off completely. And also having a very good changeup and a fastball that last year had an increased swing strike rate, but it's because he had to throw it in the zone about 10% more often, and then it got guys more comfortable looking for it, and they would go after it a bit when it was up. So that's the bigger question for me. Back in February, I was like, oh, I have no idea what's going on with Blake Snell. I'll put him at 17 or something. Then I'm like, okay, he's fine. He's up to 11. Justin Verlander, by the way, the groin injury, the tear. Lyman's like, no, he's got all this time to rest. He's fine. Like, there's nothing, there's no problem here. So if you were down on Verlander before, that's okay. But if you weren't, you shouldn't be now. Yep. Clevinger, he was actually really concerned in March when in First Pitch Florida, saying like, look, he is recovering too quickly on this knee. There is no one that should be able to pitch like this after the surgery he had. But now, well, it's been months. And even if he overworked it before, doesn't matter. He's healing it now. He should be fine. So Clevinger goes up to 6. The last one there, actually, I think that's all of the major injured ones. But that's where I'm coming from with this. I very much trust Stephen Lyman. He's an absolute expert in the field. I think that's the kind of stuff I understand like the haze of injuries, right? Like there's this idea of, hey, Hurry has a knock against him. Like, why wouldn't I use that as a tiebreaker essentially? Because I mean, I think it's not as impactful as you'd think.
Yeah. Verlander and Clevinger, I was 100% good with once they had this time off. You know, there's reports that Verlander was already starting to pitch off a mound and everything. And I'm like, that's fine. He'll be good. Yep. He's a workhorse. It's his mentality. He's not going to, if he's on the mound, he's fine. I'm good. Mm-hmm. Not a concern there. Clevinger, I kept telling everybody, well, it's his knee. Like, and yes, he was coming back too soon earlier. Like, that was scary watching him already on a mound. But now then he got to kind of slow things down and properly get ready. Then you see the videos. Cause like you said, we can only go off the info we had. And I've said it on many shows. Guys hitting in cages that their friends are recording, pitchers pitching on mounds in the desert, like whatever. That's all we have. Yeah. So like I'm going off what I have, and Clevinger looks pretty good throwing off a mound right now. Like I'm good with that.
Right.
Snell, I haven't seen a ton of. I've seen him play a lot of video games. So that's why I've just been kind of like listening to the way he talks about, you know, getting ready for next year and all this. I don't know, but I'm with you. He's going to be ready. He'll be good. I don't know. There's something, if it's just loose bodies, I was under the impression it was much worse. So that's
no, it's just that. He removed loose bodies from his elbow.
He's good. Was there a possible other injury? Did he mention James Paxton at all?
He did. I think he was okay with it for the most part. He was saying, oh yeah, I'd be drafting James Paxton. I mean, that's fine with me. I still have my reservations just about Paxton sometimes needs to ease in. He's a little more volatile in his ups and downs. And There isn't a long enough season for him to weather the storm if it's arriving there soon. Mm-hmm. So I have a little less faith, I think, in him than the other upside plays. But man, I mean, I've been a fan of Paxton for as long as I can. Essentially, I remember having him having five starts in the fall 1 year, and then was it 2013 that he had those five starts, maybe? And then getting so excited when it was the pitcher gift days in 2014. Oh man,
it all began. We're
the big game shut down.
Yep,
that's why we're Pitcher Gifts Inc. By the way, it's because it started with that, and then became as Pitcher List in 2015.
Yeah, I like Pitcher List a lot better. I think that's a good call. Thanks, buddy. You mentioned Hyunjin Ryu. He rose 18 spots for you.
Yeah,
and I have a feeling we have similar sentiments on why I rose him also.
Okay,
and it's a full season in the AL East terrified me. Like really did. I know that he's also, again, we just talked about you shouldn't worry too much about injuries. Ryu, like, really, really performed phenomenal last year. I'm not going to say outperformed, but he was way ahead of the normalcy. And yeah, we haven't even put a full season together. And going to the AL East, like, all these things just factored into it. Now it's a shorter season, and we know he's going to take care of some innings. Is that what did it for you, or what moved up Ryu for you?
I mean, yeah, you pretty much said it. Like, the concern was 150 innings, and then where am I going to get those? The Blue Jays even said, hey, we're planning for 150 innings. It was such a funny thing to me because I was so down on him. I was like, oh, no, how are you so down on him? I'm like, I don't think he's going to go for many innings. And then the Blue Jays like, yeah, we don't think so either. I was like, thank you. It's fine. No, but right. So now you have 90 innings or whatever it'll be. If even that, 80 innings. And that's fine. That's cool. I found myself saying, like, look, would I rather have Kyle Hendricks or Hyunjin Ryu over the same innings or the same amount of starts?
Mm-hmm.
I would rather have Ryu. It's pretty much the same, but a better strikeout rate. Ryu still had a 23% strikeout rate last year. It wasn't the 20% or 21% of Kyle Hendricks. And we're not excited about the turf, and we're not excited about the infield defense of the Jays. And yeah, you're still going to get a lot of the AL East, and it's not like the Braves go to the Central, right? And then
I think it's the East stays in the East, Central stays in the Central, West stays in the West is what I was under the impression.
It's completely all the way through. See, we don't know yet, right?
I think that's the impression because they're trying to limit as much travel as possible. But right. Yes, we do not know everything.
But I think they had like some swap with the Braves and someone else, and I can't remember who.
That was, I think, like the second or third plan that was in place this year.
But that wasn't all right.
I don't think it was the final thing.
This is the chaos. I'm embracing it.
Yes.
I'm giving it a hug. It's all right. I got some cocoa. You want some? It's fine. No marshmallows. Come on. You don't need that extra sugar. All right. but anyway, with Ryu, then it's, I just think honestly that he's not as bad as like a 4 year A guy. I don't think he regresses all the way there. I think he should be fine and he should be productive for ERA. Not to mention, the Blue Jays will certainly let him pitch. He's an ego guy to me, if you want to call it that. And the bottom of that rotation is more in question. So I don't think they need to baby him for the 11 starts or whatever it is. That made me push him up a lot.
Yeah, I think it goes back to the talk we had earlier about every team's going to have a couple guys they just have to let pitch.
Right.
That's exactly the way it goes. And Ryu, like you said, they paid him. He's a veteran. You let him pitch. That's just the way it's going to go. So I'm with you there. Let's go back to the fish. I'll keep saying the fish just to make Rob Silver happy. We talked Caleb Smith earlier. Sandy Alcantara he rose four spots for you. He's been a guy that I've really been intrigued by this whole offseason, this way too long offseason. We saw great pitch mix changes in the second half. What I loved about him going into a full season is the fact, even though the K rate wasn't great, second half it was much better, but he ate up so many innings. And I think finding a guy late in a draft eating innings like that is A, very rare, and B, very awesome. So now in the shortened season, you moved him up four spots. Are you still as excited of Alcantara for the same reasons, or is there anything else that might tickle your fancy?
Well, so in general, by the way, everyone past 30 increased two spots because I had to remove Syndergaard and Carrasco.
Okay.
I mean, obvious reasons for both there. But everyone got an innate plus two because of that. So then essentially, I don't think I moved up Alcantara. I think there was a couple guys I was like, you know what? I'm not actually feeling them. And I don't remember who they were. But but essentially, I mean, with Alcantara, I will say that I am more excited than I was. It's like I have this endless battle about what fastball I like. It used to be two seamers. Let's go. Let's get those ground balls. Let's have a great time. That was 2015, Nick, 2016 even. Like Joe Ross, my man. You know, loving that, right? And I've since gone, like, the pendulum has swung so far. I'm like, only four seamers. How dare you throw a sinker? Now, I understand that at heart. So I was essentially like, okay, I would love ground ball rates. I hate fly ball rates. Then I was like, okay, I hate ground ball rates. I don't care about them. Now I'm kind of like, you need ground balls and whiffs. Like, if you're able to induce a lot of whiffs and a lot of ground balls, that's actually a winning combination. Uh-huh. But so you can have ground balls as long as you get those swinging strikes too. So I'm not necessarily against, like, he had a 45% ground ball rate last year because that's a power sinker. And he had an 11% swing strike rate. And I think that Alcantara's sinker is legit in the sense that it's 97, 98. And I mean, that can still be fine. You know, that can still do things with it. He also has a four seamer that isn't absolutely terrible, from my understanding.
That's a ringing endorsement, everybody.
7% swing strike rate on it. I don't know. It was fine, but I mean, I think there were adjustments to be made. The Marlins. I had an interview with Zach Gallen. I still need to write after like 9 months or whatever. But he was saying that the Marlins are improving their analytics team, and that might have been his PR way of saying like, they're not that good and they could get better. But I will believe that he's actually saying, like, no, I think they've made some good changes and stuff, right? So I can imagine, I mean, Caleb Smith told us, like, no, we like fourth seamers up. We like fastballs up. Don't you dare throw a fastball down because...
Music to your ears.
Yeah, I was like, oh, yes. So maybe Alcantara starts doing that and moves away from that sinker, but goes towards that. But the cool thing about Alcantara is that his sinker had a 32% O-swing. I love that. That's so good. That means essentially guys are making contact with it inside a lot. Not to mention 11% swing strike rate on a sinker. You don't see that.
No.
You really don't. So that's why I had a near 12 PVAL last year. And it's kind of funny. In my head, I'm like, oh, PVAL kind of sucks, though. It's all run expectancy stuff. And run expectancy, like, I want to know more about the pitch itself. But whatever. That's another tangent for another time. But I think Alcantara has actually a decent foundation there, and his slider and his changeup can improve. Like the changeup, 17% swing strike rate. That's lovely. Zone rate is high on the slider, 48%, but kind of low, 14% swing strike rate for Alcantara's slider. And there may be room for growth there. I can imagine this working out in the shortened season. I think also he could be an innings eater, like you were saying. I'm all right. Like, he's in that group of like the upside guys that I'm considering at the end of drafts, and we'll see how that goes.
That brings me to the next guy. You're talking upside guys. He's ranked just below Alcantara, and I've heard you talk about him. It's just so hard for me to get excited for a player on the Orioles, sorry, fast, and against those AL East lineups that he's going to face a lot of very powerful right-handed hitters in those lineups. But John Means, we saw make it work for a little while. The end of the year, not the greatest that we wanted to see, but you seem pretty optimistic still on Means. What's your takes on him?
Well, I think the AL justifies the Means. No, I'm just kidding. No, it does not, though. It really doesn't. But anyway, his changeup's really, really good. He also talked about his curveball improving over the winter, and I think that's a pitch that honestly can be something. It's essentially a slider is what it's classified as. 40% zone rate, 13% swing strike rate. But really, if you look at some gifs of it when it works, it's like really nice. And if you pair that with a fastball that actually surprisingly did well at just 92 miles per hour, and obviously an amazing changeup, I think there's something there. The Orioles are going to win some games. Might as well be Means when he's on the mound. So I know wins are kind of like this weird topic right now. Mm-hmm. Because it's you're not going to get very many. Mm-hmm. So the necessity of getting them is bigger than ever. But there's also of going through five innings with the lead. And like how many middle relievers are going to get it, right? And So, I mean, I know you're worried about John Means getting it, but also it's wins are going to be so strange that I really wouldn't be too concerned about that.
When you're drafting, it's like you can't predict wins when you're drafting. It's kind of rough idea on what you have going on there. How are you approaching wins in your draft? Are you going for certain pitchers on certain teams, or are you maybe going the Bobby Sylvester route, get a bunch of relievers that could
get
you wins? Like, there's so many ways to draft this year. That's what makes it fun. But what are you going to do? What's your plan for now?
I would say, like, I would only think about wins until the last rounds. Because then I think we were talking about beforehand, maybe it was during this, like Cole Hamels for 1 year, right?
Yeah.
Like that, if he, I would be looking at the schedule when it's finally released. We'll have an article breaking down the first 2 weeks of the schedule saying like, hey, these are guys that maybe you want to consider drafting because you can stream them the first week or two. You will be able to steal some wins then.
Yeah.
Like you might say, oh no, Spencer Turnbull, he's on the Tigers. I don't want that. Well, what if he's playing the Royals in that first week? That might be a win you could steal, you know? There are going to be a lot of those early on, and I'm going to be looking at guys. Jay Happ is one too. If they're getting the Orioles in that first week, I mean, that's
tremendous. That
could be a good win, you know. Mm-hmm. Not someone I would endorse for the full year, but that's how I'm going to see it, because I'm going to be drafting too many starters, and I'm going to be with the anticipation of streaming and still trying as best I can to be doing the burn and churn, whatever you want to call that, because especially in a 12 teamer. If you're not confident with your lineup and your hitting lineup, I don't know. This is the year where you need to be like set in stone with that, because it's 60 games. Like, you don't have enough time to really shift. So you got to feel better about them in the draft. But then in pitching, well, there is all these other things you can just throw at the wall on the wire all the time. I say in normal 12 teamers, you can. Mm-hmm. And during the full season, I mean, now more than ever, you can actually squeeze out bench value because, I mean, you can just swap in starts and not lose anything. So that's kind of where I'm going at it with it. And when it comes to wins, I mean, if I really feel like I need that, I'll be focusing a lot about that first 2 weeks and kind of taking it from there.
Yeah, another angle on that is when it hits the waiver wire, you know, if certain teams are going to have their lineup pretty much locked in because they're all competing at the start of the year, it's a great chance that certain teams can make the playoffs. They usually don't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
So they're going to be going hard. But the pitching, like you said, is – maybe some teams, maybe some starters, so there's some long relievers that all of a sudden pop out as, okay, right, they're going to have ratios, strikeouts, they might sneak in 4 or 5 wins this year. That's tremendous. Like, that is crazy good. And then there's also some teams might all of a sudden go 6-man rotation. There's a lot of ways to go bad. So it could be one of those years where pitching becomes much more available on the waiver wire, which would be very interesting.
So that sounds great to me.
that's right in your wheelhouse. Let's talk about a veteran who's going to Minnesota this year, was injured, but he benefited from this late start because he's good to go. I expect him to go 5+ innings out the gate. At least that's my train of thought. And he moved up 18 spots, obviously, because he's healthy now and more. But Rich Hill, I am a huge Rich Hill fan. Apparently everybody else is, because his ADP is going through the roof. He's pretty much almost out of draftability for me, according to ADP. Now in our mock draft, he went much later, which is more my liking. But are you buying into Rich Hill this season?
No. I'm really sorry, guys. It's weird. Rich Hill is a very odd pitcher. He's someone who, I don't know if you guys realize, his last 4 starts of the year last year, he totaled 5.2 innings, or 6.2 innings, because
that's not good.
Weird with him. I don't know if he can be this good again. I mean, he's dealing from yet another injury, and coming back for it. And I understand, be on the Twins, be excited, but then just get Kenta Maeda. Okay, just a much better option.
Very true.
I think actually they went somewhat close to each other. Richard went in the 15th and Maeda went in the 10th. Okay. I don't think I'm going for Hill in the 15th, though. I feel like it's too risky of a proposition. I know we don't want to like talk about injury prone a lot and stuff, but I mean, man, Rich Hill could very easily not
use the poster child
season.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm not really on it. Not to mention, I wouldn't be shocked if he gets that starting gig and he's actually just not that good anymore. how old is he now? He is 40.
Yeah, he's 40.
He is 40.
We're not here to age shame. No, I'm just kidding.
I just want people to really understand that.
I know. 40 is very old for pitching.
This continues like this productive, and especially coming off of an injury, mm-hmm. where you don't have necessarily the same feel of stuff too. He only threw 13 games last year. You're like, oh, he's always injured. Well, no, the previous three, he had at least 20 starts and 110 innings in each of those, and only 358 last year. And it's just all concerning. So, I mean, if you're talking about the 15th round, guys that went that round, well, earlier on, Mackenzie Gore and Luke Weaver, then Rich Hill, Andrew Heaney, who I still have some concerns on, but less so than Hill, Caleb Smith. Afterwards, other names I would really look towards, Mitch Keller, Sean Manaea. We talked about Mike Foltynewicz very briefly before. Sandy Alcantara, Spencer Turnbull, Toby's boy, Austin Voth. I would go for Hill about that, but you know. But essentially, it's too risky of a proposition, I think, at this point, considering we also really don't even know where he's at the moment. True. So, I'm out.
Yeah, it's interesting. He's 40. Donaldson's late 30s. The Boomstick just turned 40. That's quite the Twins go. If anybody needed a shortened season, could be the Twins.
Oh, but, man. Good point.
Let's do a couple quick hitters real quick, and then we'll do the listener questions. Just real quick, you got them ranked this way, and I want to just, if you're in your draft, the end of Tier 1 is Justin Verlander. Beginning of Tier 2 is Walker Buehler.
Yeah.
Are you 100% Verlander over Buehler in a draft?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's Justin Verlander is absurdly good. Yeah. And I know that we like Walker Buehler, but he has no pitches that are as good as either Verlander's fastball or Verlander's slider.
I'm glad you said that because I've been fighting that argument. I love Buehler. I believe this guy is the future of pitching. I know it's really Captain Obvious stuff, but what Verlander can still do is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Two Indians teammates, Clevinger, Bieber. I'm with you on Clevinger over Bieber. It's been a very hot topic for like the last multiple weeks that Bieber should be. Why do you separate him?
The coolest argument for Bieber is the fact that he went deeper into games last year than like any other pitcher,
yeah,
which is great. Bieber was a guy in rhythm though. And I think that Clevinger's stuff is just kind of better.
Mm-hmm.
It's strange. Clevinger's slider, actually, like the thing that we think is really good with him, didn't have an O-swing above 40% or a zone rate over 40%. Kind of weird, because I always talk about those as the thresholds for like that those numbers being good, and neither one hit it last season. But it was much better in 2018. And also Clevinger's best pitch is really his fastball, which is actually like on par with Walker Buehler's, which is crazy. And what's the main thing that Bieber doesn't have? Well, it's a good fastball. It's kind of mediocre. And I do wonder if Bieber overperformed a little bit. Derek Van Riper made a great point about being too worried about the whiff rates, like the too whiff reliant that Shane Bieber has been with his slider and curveball, which is an interesting point. One of the biggest changes he made last year was throwing his fastball lower to lefties, but it was down and away for the most part, instead of middle and away. And that really helped him against lefties, which were always a problem for him. I don't know if that's really something that actually should facilitate a fantastic season from Bieber. And I think Clevinger's stuff is just more overwhelming. And he can, I think he's just kind of a more solid bet. But honestly, like if you're going to go for a star, then fine. Bieber, Clevinger, you should be happy with either one. I have them 6 and 7, I believe.
Yeah, 6 and 7. Both very close. Bieber just, he concerns me. If he's not locating that fastball, it'll get ugly real quick.
So. I mean, I know a lot of people talk about the command of Bieber, mm-hmm. the fastball command. I don't act, it's weird because he has good control with it. He sometimes has good command with it, but the fact that he's choosing to put it where he is odd.
Mm-hmm.
It's not ideal, I think. So the question is, do I believe that he has the capability of changing that and getting better? Or is it more of just kind of like, this is what he does with it and that's what he does with it? I don't know.
We'll find out.
We'll see.
You stay tuned. Same time, same bat channel. Clayton Kershaw. He's a topic right now. I like him a little more than usual because shortened season, like the back always concerned me, but I like him because I feel starting the year, he's going to go. Like, that's one thing I'm really happy about. Like you mentioned, you could steal a few wins early. Kershaw can do that. Plus, pitching for the Dodgers, you're going to get a lot of W's. That's just the way it's going to go. Maybe not him, but the team will get a lot of W's. So he'll be in line for chances. Mm-hmm. Are you a believer in Kershaw this year? Because there's been some negativity going his direction.
Man, I just want to see how hard he's throwing.
Yeah, that's very valid.
That's the thing. Like, he was talking about him going to driveline over the winter and trying to increase his velocity again. Like, if he can just not be a 90-mile-per-hour guy, 91, 92, that will help mask mistakes from him. I guess I'm not really a big Kershaw believer. Like, I mean, I have him in the top 15. I know some people probably have him outside of that. I haven't been in a position yet to draft him. Like, this is the first time ever drafting Paddock. I'm like, whoa, crazy. Sixth round. Oh, man. Wow. People live like this. But I wouldn't say that I see these drafts going, and I guess I see people that, okay, they're thinking they want a starter now. Yeah, I would go with Kershaw if I wanted a starter then, if that makes sense. I'm not necessarily in a love fest. Like, I don't think he's top 10. But I if I had to answer the question, do I think that Kershaw will have increased velocity relative to last year? I would say yes. I'm excited, hopefully, for an improved Kershaw.
All right. I'm good with that, too. Like, I have Kershaw and Darvish back-to-back, two guys I'm very, very happy with this season. The last quick hitter for you, Corey Kluber. You mentioned him earlier about the mock draft. Last year, injuries and whatnot, given it was a line drive he had no control over. Just going to say that one. But going to Texas, new stadium, climate controlled, some things to look forward to there. Another innings eater. I know it's a used term, but it's true. You have him ranked 18th. That's pretty high, and I'm not doubting it. But what's your reasoning behind having him up that high?
I think that he's completely removed from a loft season, and this is a guy that was legitimately top 10 for ages, and then had a lost season. The Rangers also, yeah, they're going to let him go. They're going to let him do his thing. He has two unbelievable secondary pitches in his cutter and breaking ball. I'm going to call it a breaking ball because I don't think he knows what it is. It's a two-seamer and a four-seamer, but they're fine. Like, they're always – well, they're not fine. They're bad, but they're good enough to support those two amazing secondary pitches. And I think, honestly, like, you're going to be trying to find a guy that's consistent. Look, I see a lot of people going after Glasnow, for example, way ahead of him. And I mean, what is the thing that we always talk about is just, I want the rock, the one that's stable and consistent and obviously good and not chase, you know, as Rob Silver would tell me, the squirrel, right? And like, you know, don't chase the new hot thing or whatever. Chase the thing that is like consistently amazing. Like, yeah, I know you're worried about like the decreased velocity he had in April before the line drive, and also the fact that he tries to rush back and he hurts his oblique. I get it, but I don't think that was like us being saved from the downturn of Kluber. I think it was more of just a little weird patch and then it'd be gone. So I'm very much in on Kluber. I think anyone that gets him is just going to be thrilled to have drafted such a high quality pitcher as late as he's going. And you know, in the short season, I'll be like, oh yeah, wait, yeah. Wait, Corey Kluber, right, Klubot. Yeah, he's really good, right? Okay, cool.
The Klubot, yes, the Klubot. I love it. Let's go to some listener questions here. You pretty much already hit on this, but we can hit on it real quick. John H. asks, he would love to hear more thoughts on the bullish ranking of Caleb Smith. Cheers.
Oh, yeah. It's all about that velocity. Like, it dropped in the second half of last year. Yeah, that hip injury. He's healed from it. He even acknowledged it on our podcast. I got into that argument, 9-11 starts, right? 9 or 11 starts. Man, I got to say that or. But right, it's essentially, I mean, it's that long of a season now. I think the increased velocity would come, and that excites me.
Yep, no doubt about it. Richard Sands asks, love Nick and his list. We all do. Oh,
man, well, I love Richard Sands, though. He's great.
There you go. Since many of the guys might not be going five innings, example, Urias, who we kind of mentioned this, which other pitchers do you value highly?
Because of the increased innings, right?
Yes.
I'm gonna as much as I want to think that I have fully memorized my list, I need to sometimes refresh my memory. I do think Frankie Montas is someone that the A's actually will be pushing a little bit. Trevor Bowers should be considered more because he will be pushed. You know, like he will refuse to be babied, like absolutely refuse.
Yeah, he will have that ego thing going for him.
Right. I mean, I will say this about Kenta Maeda is like the whole stipulation about his contract in 140 innings or every 10 innings gaining more money. Well, who cares about that now?
Yep.
So that's fascinating to me. And I think the Tigers are not going to hold back on Matthew Boyd either. So those are a couple game names off the top of my head that I would consider. I would pull back on like Tyler Glasnow. Pull back on, let's see, Brandon Woodruff. I know that's kind of weird, but the Brewers were weird with him in September last year, and that brings me a little bit of concern. I would pull back on Soroka, pull back on Luzardo, and I think that rounds out for the most part the guys that I'd pull back from in the top 30 or 40 or so.
He also asked, are there any middle reliever types that you're hot or high innings guys who aren't starting pitchers?
Oh, man.
That's a tough one. I mean,
Yarbrough, does that count?
I think Yarbrough and Chirinos could be very interesting. I don't know. I think Chirinos are going to start, so that might be a little different.
Yeah.
But those two could be interesting, I think. I heard Chris Bassett is one that's getting floated around a lot right now.
Jason Collette is like the biggest Bassett fan. The question for me is it going to be a six-man rotation for the A's? Then I maybe are not so high on Frankie Montas and Sean Manaea, but he's a big fan of that. And then it's also like, if it's not a six-man, does Bassett beat out AJ Puck? Maybe he does. Mm-hmm. I'm not too sure. I don't know. I mean, I hope we get more clarity on six versus five mans because that does make a massive difference.
Yes.
That's like two starts or so. That's huge.
Yeah, a lot. It'll be very, very big. So
this is crazy. Middle relievers. Uh-huh. That's the wrong guy. I'm really sorry, Richard. Fortunately, he's a PL Plus member, so he can ask Rick Ram, our fantastic reliever expert at the site. So definitely do that. But I mean, I got Dylan Patanzas in this draft.
Yes, I saw that. That's the thing, is there's going to be some fun ones. I think like Lugo for the Mets is an intriguing one. Every team's going to have a couple guys that you could, you know, the Padres have Pomeranz and Pagan. They can both be interesting. Right. Stuff like that. There's ways to build it around.
Yeah, I'm very curious what will happen.
Will Garofalo asks, your favorite under-the-radar target in a shortened season?
I could hear from Will, too.
Yep.
Favorite underrated target, is that right?
Under the radar target.
Under the radar target. do you want like the true dark horses or just like the ones
that are go crazy, Nick? Go crazy.
So there's two of them. One I mentioned yesterday is Brad Keller. If he does bring out the 95 mile per hour velocity that he had last year before he got injured, well, that might actually be somewhat interesting. Hey, if he goes against the Tigers in that first week, there's your stealing a win. The other one is Chad Kuhl, who we gotta recognize that this guy's throwing upper 90s with a stupid good slider before he had Tommy John in 2018. And he also was increasing that slider usage right before he got it, to the point that I made an article saying, like, hey, he's doing this thing 1 hour before his start where he got blown up because his elbow was killing him. And that was really funny to me. Where this article, I'm like, I'm so confident. And then the comments of that article on Rotographs are like, ooh, no, this did not age well. But then, of course, he had one more start at the top of John, and I was like, okay, at least that explains it. I feel terrible for him that he has it now. But those are the two like true dark horse in my mind of like, hey, we might legit care about these guys. Chad Kuhl has some weird people to beat. Like he has to beat out Derek Holland for that fifth spot right now, but hey, maybe everyone does a six man. I don't know. So those are some names that don't get tossed around enough. That I think should be considered.
The good old Dutch oven in Pittsburgh. That'll be an interesting development there with Holland.
The Dutch invasion.
Dutch invasion. Oh yes. Mr. Holland. Less than Dave. Dave McDonald has a couple questions. We're going to start with the first one. Does Nick base his starting pitcher rankings off of a numerical rating, like a stuff rating? If so, what goes into that? If not, how do you do your rankings?
Absolutely not. I wish. That would be cool and easy, right? No, I'm someone that doesn't really... I mean, I did projections this year for our draft guide, And I actually called them Nick's reluctant projections. I didn't actually say Nick's I had to add in reluctant just to show like I don't enjoy this, okay? I don't think that projections are the greatest thing ever because I think people become too reliant on them to do everything and tell them everything. And it's the range of outcomes is just as important, if not more so, to me. And understanding the craft and the actual repertoire and saying, like, look, like this is a fastball that I think can get better. This is one that I think overperformed. And understanding those elements, you know, taking a pitcher, and I hear this all the time, like, oh man, I really like this one pitcher. I really think if he takes the next step, he'll be great. And the question I always ask is, well, what would that next step be? Like, can he, what change happens? And if you can't tell me what that would be, then I'm not going to buy that he'll have that change, right? But I'm on Zach Wheeler because I think there is a significant change that can be made with him, which is instead of pitching east-west like he was with the Mets, I think Wheeler's four-seamer is fantastic. It works north-south with a slider that actually misses bats and can be really effective. And he was very underutilized, I think, in New York, especially with Wilson Ramos as catcher, which, Casey, if you've watched a game with Wilson Ramos catching,
it's not pretty.
And really, like, notice what he's doing and where he's setting up and how he receives it. Oh, it is so painful. But now he's going to JT Realmuto, who loves the frame perfectly, snatches the ball and leaves the glove there and sticks it, you know? It's excellent. I can't wait for Zach Wheeler to get that proper treatment. So those are the kind of things that I look at what they've done, and you know, the strikeout rates and, you know, the CSW, you know, swing strike rates, O swing zone rates, all that kind of stuff. But for me, when it comes to making these rankings, truly it comes down to what is their repertoire? What has this dictated before? Do I think that what they did last year or previous seasons or whatever was in line with that repertoire, and was it more fluky or is it more rhythm, or is that actually something that, you know, over time this should equate to success or not? That's generally the approach I have. And then of course there's a mixing pot of like degradation or development.
Okay.
Yeah, the power, the true D&D is not Dungeons and Dragons, it's degradation and development, guys.
I like that. I like that. More and more phrases from Pitcher List.
Always.
Another question from Dave McDonald. What does Nick think gains and loses the most value in a shortened season?
What specifically? Like,
I don't know. That's a very loaded question.
I would think that, okay, what gains in value, I think it's more important to get the hitters that you trust, because you just don't have the amount of time that we normally give for hitters to figure it out. The benefit of pitchers, and why I'm so shocked that fewer, not as many people as I do, only specialize in pitching, because we have one start that is like the equivalent of like 5-6 games of a hitter in one night. So we can make quicker analysis. And so for me, that means in a shorter season, it makes it easier to do pitching things than it is to do hitter things.
That makes sense.
So if any time for me, these drafts, I'm suppressing pitching more because it's such a necessity to feel comfortable in my lineup that I'm not that isn't the hindrance that I need to figure out before it's too late.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And that kind of goes with the next question here from Robbie Steinerman. He asks, what does the shorter season affect the most? Are all pitchers moved down? Do elite pitchers move up? Closers move up? Like, who do you think it affects the most?
It's a lot of people have been saying, okay, I want my stud pitchers now because more uncertainty, lock that in. But then there's talk of like Garrett Cole not throwing 100 pitches in his first game. What?
It's just crazy. Just I don't understand that at all. Crazy talk.
I don't like this. So right now we're completely in the haze where it just makes everything middle. I mean, or normalized a bit. Middle relievers will have some value. I'm going to say this from a fantasy baseball player. I don't want to deal with it. I'm lazy. I'm a fantasy baseball player. I don't want to have to spend every day trying to figure out who to vulture wins or saves from with my middle relievers. So I'm okay, like, during a draft to chase a couple ones, like, you know, drafting Nick Anderson, kind of like, you know what, win saves, you'll probably get something in there. Your Karen Shack, your Dylan Betances, as you said, Seth Lugo, right? Like, sure, I'm fine just taking a couple and just see what happens with it. But for the most part, it's not something that I want to deal with. So I don't really find myself really, like, shoving them up drafts now.
Quick question for you. You just mentioned Garrett Cole. We talked about Mike Trout maybe having a 14-day quarantine. Cole's wife is pregnant as well. Now, if you're talking 14 days, that could be 2 to 3 starts on an already shortened start season. I know you don't take pitchers early, but would he just be like a no-go for you?
Yeah. I mean, okay, where are you drafting Ohtani, the pitcher?
See, I've had this debate, and some people think I'm crazy. If I know he's getting one start a week, so I'm getting, say, 11 starts from Ohtani.
No, you're not. Whoa, hold on. You're not getting that. Because one in every 7 days. So then times 11 would be 77.
Okay, because I thought they give him one a week. So let's say, so you get nine starts then.
Yeah, essentially it's like 9 versus the 11. Maybe 8 or so. It depends on when they start him, right? But yeah. So you're essentially losing like 20% of expected production.
I'd still have him as a top 50 pitcher.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. I have him in the top 40.
Yeah, I was gonna say I probably have him around 35-ish.
Okay. Yeah. So I think honestly, people are kind of undervaluing Ohtani enough because I think the quality of his performances are gonna be like really high. Like, you're gonna be really happy that you had him.
Yeah. If we knew he would pitch every 5 days, obviously, yeah, that's
he'd be top. He would be like 15 for me or 14.
I was about to say he'd be in that like Corbin, Kershaw, Darvish, Castillo talk. Easily. Yeah,
exactly. 100%. So that's the thing with Ohtani. I feel kind of weird. Like, where should I go from? And it's also, like, if I'm going after Kluber, and then, like, if I have to go, like, Kluber or Greinke together, Ohtani is the perfect match for this.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, those are, like, more of the innings guys, and then you have, like, the volume strikeout guy that you're not killing the inning or the ratios with. That's Ohtani. So the reason I bring that up is because if Garrett Cole's missing 2 starts or 3 starts, it's kind of like Ohtani, but like a little bit better. So then if I have Ohtani at 36, which I do right now, then Cole will probably go to like 25 or something like that.
Okay. And that's never going to happen in a draft, but it makes tons of sense.
Yeah.
I just think it's an interesting topic because Trout's been discussed a lot about not going one because of what's going on.
Yeah. He's only going to see Cole 3 spots though.
Yeah, true. But I still see Cole going like as the first pitcher off the board. That hasn't changed.
Yeah.
So that's interesting to me.
Yeah, that's a good point. I haven't heard enough about the Cole family pregnancy, so
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, this is where we're at, guys.
Pay attention to all the news you can see. You got 2 more questions here, and I saved these 2 for last. They're a little one's still fantasy baseball related, and then one's Yancy Eaton. So let's go to Dan Strafford first. Good old Dan Strafford. He says, is there a prominent zig seen as so many try to figure out the data projections for a 60-game season? How can one get an edge with the present state of content and small sample? It's a great question because all these projections are coming out in Fangraphs, and they all vary so much when it comes to pitching because no one really knows what's going to happen. We've great never seen
chaos. Okay. Enjoy the fireside chat with whiskey. Okay.
With whiskey. And there's so much great content out there. And there's so many different ways that are getting it broken down. How do you recommend navigating it? How do you be different, I guess?
The number one piece of advice is to read the roundup every day. No, just kidding. honestly, I think the thing that will help the most is the thing we don't have yet, and that's the schedule.
Yes.
And once we have the schedule, we got to break that thing down and be like, look, this is not like it normally is in the season. What I do in September of every year is the most annoying thing ever, which really is like the last week of August, where I redo the list, but then list out the expected schedules for everybody. And it's so arduous and so annoying, and I hate it every time, but it's a necessary thing because I feel like I'd be doing a disservice ranking these guys without taking in the factor of who they're playing. So in a shortened, I mean, that's like with 6 starts to go. And that's like half the season. So really, in my head, it's like I should be doing the list in a couple of weeks again with schedules heavily influenced into it. Because, I mean, that's going to be the difference maker for a lot of these guys. Yeah. And I remember actually the beginning of the year, I was intrigued with Dylan Bundy, but then I was like, you know what? It looks like he's going to get the Astros twice in his first two starts. I don't want that. And that's a huge piece of information. Like, I wouldn't want to be streaming Dylan Bundy early, right? But then after that, let's see how he's doing. And maybe, like, I'll pick up him up in, like, May or something. But I mean, that's the kind of thing that you can definitely do to get an advantage that isn't talked about enough.
Yeah, the schedule is going to be very big this year for the advantages you just mentioned. I know, like, when we looked at, even for hitters, oh, this guy opens up with a series in Colorado. I can just drop him after that. No big deal, but that's huge. Things along those lines. But in this shortened season, these schedules are definitely not going to be balanced. Like, they usually try to make balanced schedules. These are not going to be balanced. And that's just the hard and fast of it. So it'll be really interesting to see, you know, pitcher A, does he pitch in the West and have more starts against the bottom parts of the West or the top parts in the West? Stuff along those lines that'll elevate things or lower in certain regards. So you're right. It's going to – and the reports from, like, Jason Stark and the guys as of Wednesday is – they're hoping sometime towards the end of next week they'll get the schedule. But right now it's the teams playing cautious. That's where they're at right now.
That makes a lot of sense. And one thing I will add too is there's a lot of discussion about removing the DH. Adding the DH rather for the NL pitchers and how much that affects them. Honestly, I'm not doing a thing. I know everyone is like, okay, 10% shift because it's better hitters and stuff. You're not wrong.
No.
I will tell you as a pitcher that the mentality is different. Like, you attack pitchers differently. And if that was just a pinch hitter or something like that, I don't think that it's just going to create this massive change in your ratios and performance. It just doesn't seem right to me. And I mean, we've seen guys go from like the NL to the AL before and same kind of ordeal, you know, and vice versa. It's not like all of a sudden it becomes so much better when they go to the NL. I want to call it like a sabbatical when they go from like the AL to the NL.
It's amazing.
What I think of is like him going to be a Brewer and then dominating, right?
Everything.
But it's not. I'm not going to shift my ranks because of that. It just doesn't sit right with me.
And I agree with that. Most people are saying it's a heavy shift. Like, I see their argument. I'm not going to ignore it because it definitely anything is better than a pitcher. But my side of the argument is, as a guy that's grown up as a National League fan, and I know the Giants are a bad example here, but a lot of National League teams don't have a designated hitter. That's just they're not built that way.
Oh, that's an interesting argument. Yeah.
American League teams, literally, Nelson Cruz is signed to the Twins for millions of dollars to DH. That's what he does.
Right.
Most National League teams, like Dave Roberts already came out for the Dodgers and said he's using the DH to give guys days off. He listed off almost every single player in his roster that could DH this season.
Right.
That's what he's going to do. And I think a lot of teams are going to do that. So it'll be interesting. All right. Mr. Yancey Eaton, our good friend, Yancey Eaton. And I love Yancey for many reasons besides being a great guy. Whenever I ask for listener questions, he comes with the off-the-wall stuff, and I respect the heck out of it.
I mean, he had so many great questions for you.
Yes.
So.
Oh, and you guys. Like, he's – I'm telling you, he needs to do his own show, period, but that's a whole other topic. Another day. But genuinely a great guy, and he had a great question here. A weird series of events make it so that neither of you can podcast about baseball or sports in general ever again. But you have to continue podcasting or everyone dies. What subject are you podcasting about in order to save humanity? Nick?
What is this, Yancey? What am I podcasting about? It's funny. Like, okay, so my podcasting like world, I didn't really listen to podcasts before doing one, really. And for me, like, I only podcast because there's things changing. Like, it's new things and they're changing about it. And there's also like a game being played. So I'm trying to give advice for it. And I would feel so weird. Like, I have interests, you know, I play guitar and love like progressive metal and stuff, and I coach basketball, and obviously I'm, you know, like so many others, I enjoy video games and stuff too, and I could talk about all of that, but it's not like advice. It's not like, you know, it's not like my thought process for playing this game, and it feels so weird talking just about the news that, you know, everyone else kind of heard, and who really cares? It's kind of what I would think about that stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. So if I had another podcast, I would probably do a cast bringing on interesting people to talk about their lives that we wouldn't know about. Mm-hmm. Kind of like what it's like to be an electrical engineer. You know, what on earth do you do? What are like the hardships of it? What are, you know, what is that process like? I would want to have a podcast about the people and what their lives are like. That is, then we can see into that field and what, you know, what things humans do. That to me would be probably what I would do.
That is a reason why Nick is who Nick is, because he has a very thought out and thoughtful answer. That'd be a really cool show though, because when you get interested in listening and you hold a conversation, you could make a lot of things sound awesome. So I could see that being actually a pretty cool thing. For me, it came down to like one of two things, and I know Yancey will appreciate one of them for sure, but I love TV, like good TV shows. So I could talk about TV shows and we could do something like that, but that's out there. People do that. The other thing is my wife and I, we're kind of foodies. We like going to restaurants and having good meals and trying different things. It doesn't have to be fancy restaurants at all, just going and trying things.
Yeah.
I would enjoy, it would be a podcast based on food, but I like to be able to like interview the cooks and sure, like what brings it out of them, what made them think, okay, let's try it this way, all those type of things. I think that would be a fun idea instead of, you know, hey, we're going to do this, we had this for dinner and we like this kind of food. I want to hear like the process. And right, I think that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, that's, I mean, yeah, it's like the same thing. We want to hear about the humanity of things.
Yeah.
Right, and the characters that exist in it, and like how we all tick, and you know the pieces of knowledge that we're so not even aware are out there to acquire, right?
Yeah, because that's kind of, you said we give advice for a game we play, but in reality, we're breaking down the process.
Right,
that's all we're doing. So it's a similar thing, but we're trying to get a different viewpoint on a different subject. So I think that'd be kind of fun to see and do, because there's a ton of podcasts. That's the old joke. Everyone can do a podcast, but I'd be curious to see something non-sports related. Those would be some interesting shows, because I would not want to do politics. I would not want to go anywhere near that.
Right.
But that's just a bad idea. So it'd be interesting. That'd be very, so, very interesting.
It's kind of funny that this is brought up. I don't even think I told Yancey about this. I'm doing a podcast tomorrow. It's not going to be on the corner. I haven't announced it or anything yet. I'm going to be doing one with Jordan Davis. I don't know if you guys know him. He's a rising star in country music.
Oh, I'm a very big country fan, so I understand.
So he's, you know, we're going to do a podcast tomorrow. which is, I mean, I'm excited. We're just going to sit back and talk about baseball. He's a big Rangers fan, grew up in Louisiana. Talk a little bit about music and guitar too. It's obviously going to be a little different than the normal, like, hey, it's a Pitchless podcast and it won't be fantasy and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, hopefully I'll kind of go into like, what is the craft of writing a song and what is the world from your eyes kind of thing. So maybe there you go, Yance. If you talk
country music is the best example of people telling a story. Like that's what they do. So you're gonna get some answers that are gonna be really cool if you really sit down.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm still trying to grasp like why I get to do this, but that's what's happening tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to that. So that should be fun.
Well, awesome. I look forward to listening to it. And before we sign off on this awesome episode, once again, plug Pitcherlist, Pitcherlist Plus, your Twitter, all that good stuff.
Nah, you guys know all of that. I want to plug you for 300 episodes. Did it.
Thank you.
300 times, Casey Bubba. That's unbelievable. You should be so proud. Yeah, obviously have a fantastic thing that you're doing here. And we're just so happy for you, man. This is great. 300. That's like, that's really, oh, that's a major accomplishment. There should be some like general podcast committee that just sends you something for doing it. You know, I like the YouTube Play Award thing, you know, when you get like 1,000 or 100,000 subscribers or whatever it is. There should be the like, oh, hey, you did 300 podcasts. Like, sweet.
Pretty awesome.
Congratulations, man.
I appreciate it. And I appreciate you coming back on the show again and chatting it up with me. I always enjoy talking with you. It's a good time. I look forward to doing it again sometime, hopefully before 400.
Of course, so. When there's actually baseball.
Yes. Besides just talking to you tonight, the last couple episodes have been great because we actually have something to talk about.
Right. That's true.
Because how hard was it to try to do this for like 3.5 months?
Well, I didn't. Like, Fast and I, we were fortunate enough to be able to reach out and to talk to all those pitchers, but we didn't want to talk baseball. You know, we didn't want to talk about that because it was just like, what are we going to do? You know, we got to know more about what we're dealing with first. So.
100% with you. So now we got something to talk about. We have hopefully baseball coming up in like 3 weeks.
Woo! So yes,
it's around the corner. Then Nick can watch every game all the time and endure all his friends. So until then, check Nick out on Twitter at PitcherList and at PitcherList.com and PitcherList Plus, all that great stuff. But again, Nick, thanks for joining me, my friend.
Oh, an absolute pleasure. And again, congratulations, Bubba.
Thank you. Everybody, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 300. Catch you guys next time.
Better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.